Welcome, everybody. This is your host, Charles Cook, here of the Immigration Hour, the Immigration Hour podcast. It's great to be with you. I was going back and looking at the long years of immigration podcasts, and I realized we've been doing this for a very long time. But we had a change in providers, and that provider would not refuse to give me the content that we had recorded over the years. It's still available online, and there's lots of great stuff in there. One of my favorite podcasts is actually two of them, where we talked to a couple of zealots about birthright citizenship. This was back in, gosh, got to be 08, during the election of Obama. Oh, yeah, it was big news. So I've been doing this podcast probably 15 years. Had an interregnum for a while, and we changed providers, and now we're back up on SoundCloud, which, of course, gets broadcast everywhere. So it's good to be with you. Today's topic, I have three topics. I always try to have three topics to talk about. The first one, it comes about because I keep seeing people. People keep coming in asking about this. And honestly, it's just driving me crazy. I'm going to do it in Spanish in my Facebook Live today. This is something that the Biden administration has not done a lot of good stuff on immigration. They are really just not managing the process well, except there are a couple of quasi-shining examples. And one of those is the new Family Reunification Parole Program. Now, the Family Reunification Program was announced in early July by the Biden administration. And basically what this is, I guess it was in May they announced it, is people, certain people, citizens of Colombia, El Salvador, Guatemala and Honduras, and their immediate family members who have approved family-based petitions filed by U.S. citizen or lawful permanent resident relatives will be invited to participate in the program. So basically what this means is, one, you have to have been previously sponsored by your relative. Second, that petition, which was filed with the Immigration Service, must be approved. Now, the big problem with that, of course, if you go to the USCIS processing pages and you look at, for example, things like how long is it taking? Let's take a look at that. How long is USCIS taking to process a sibling petition filed with it? Now, go to the website and you select I-130 on their handy-dandy website and you say, U.S. citizen filing for their sister. Let's say it's filed with the National Benefits Center. And immigration is saying that's taking 42 months. That's not true. Let's look at the California Service Center. How long is the California Service Center taking? They say that's taking 86 months. There you go. Now we're getting into realistic terms. 8 to 9 years. That's what it's taking. Now, why is that a problem? Well, that's a problem because, of course, you're not eligible for this program until the application's approved. So if you're at Nebraska Service Center, you're going to take 86 months, you're Texas, you're 40 months, and you have no control over which service center your case, and you cannot participate in this program until it's approved. Now, there's a reason that immigration runs this Ponzi scheme on family-based cases that are in the priority date system. Their position is their delaying of adjudication helps applicants because it allows them to benefit, or their children to benefit, from the Child Status Protection Act. Because as long as the petition is pending, the child's age is frozen, such that when you do reach their place in line, their age isn't what it is when they reach the age in line. It's their age minus the time it was pending. And, you know, that may be good news for some people. You know, if you're Mexican, does it really make a difference? Because they're taking 30 years to get a green card through a sibling. So why wait? Now, Mexico, of course, can't participate in the program. So, but Colombia, El Salvador, Honduras, and Guatemala can. So how long is the processing time? You know, what's the wait time for these categories for these other countries? We can take a look at the new September visa bulletin, which did see some movement forward yesterday when it was announced. And this visa bulletin says that if I file today for my sibling, and I'm not from Mexico, which has a very long waiting period, or Philippines, or India. I'm going to wait about 16 years. So it's 2007. If I'm filing for my adult unmarried child as a citizen, that wait's going to be about 8 years. Same for my adult unmarried child of a resident, about 8 years. For they've retrogressed spouses and minor children. That's going to be fixed a great deal. I'm not even going to get into that today. We'll kind of compare that in a couple of weeks when the new visa bulletin for October comes out. Or unmarried children of citizens is taking about 14 years. And so for adult unmarried children, why, you know, they're coming. So why would the adjudication period be longer? So let's look at the adjudication period for the adult unmarried child of a U.S. citizen. You file for adult unmarried child over the age of 21. They say that processing time in California is 77 months. So that's 6 years. You need that process faster. So if you are from one of these countries, you're from your relative is from one of these countries, or you are, I guess, as well. You can file a lawsuit and force them to adjudicate that case faster so they become eligible for the Biden Family Reunification Program. Because not only do you have to have been applied for and been approved, you have to wait for an invitation. You cannot begin the process to get your relative the parole to get the invitation. Now, we started getting invitations on Monday. And I think we've gotten about a dozen invitations so far. But three of them, however, are odd, and I don't have an answer to this question yet. Maybe one of our listeners does. One of our cases is for an individual. Three of them are for individuals who are processing 601A waivers. And they're in the United States. They're not outside the United States. So can they? Is immigration going to do a parole in place? What are they going to do? So, because if they did parole in place, then we could just adjust their status in the United States. But here's the deal. So the person must be outside the United States. So unfortunately, for those people inside the United States, they are not going to be able to benefit from this program because they have to be outside the United States. So the discretionary grant of parole, they are not extending to parole in place inside the United States, which is terrible. Why not do it? If you're going to do it for somebody outside, why are you doing it for the inside? They're going to, just to get more money from them, just to make them wait, just to make them punish. So this parole program is starting now. When we get notification, all that has to happen is the U.S. relative has to go online and fill out a form I-134. This I-134 form is pretty simple. Basically says, look, I'm going to make sure that they're not going to go on welfare, although it's not a contract. You're agreeing to support them, but it's not a legally enforceable contract. I don't think it is. I am a lawyer. So you file that, and then we don't know yet. Presumably within a couple of months, they will be eligible in the United States. So that is the Biden parole, family unification parole program, which does have one major flaw. It doesn't allow for those who are inside the United States to get parole in place, but it will let people in the country. And what it doesn't do is freeze their age. So if you are, let's say you were filed for your sibling in 2010, 2007 is the priority date, and they can come now. The case is approved. Well, Child Status Protection Act, let's say their kid is 19. Well, their kid will come too, but their kid may age out. So you definitely need a lawyer to look at these things because there's a lot of moving pieces to the consequences of the family reunification program. So there's that. The next thing I wanted to talk about was really interesting information coming out of Florida, in that our friends at in Florida are having a little bit of a problem getting workers. This is fascinating to me because it is exactly what we predicted would happen. It's exactly what happened in Florida, in Georgia, when Georgia passed their crazy butt law. But sure enough, Florida employers say they're losing workers because of the new stupid immigration laws they passed. This is fascinating, but it's not unusual. Nobody is surprised by this because we all knew it was going to happen. The New York Times says that because of this new law, which Governor DeSantis projected, people just left. I know people came to Georgia because I've met with them, and they've gone to other states as well. And it's hilarious. They're coming to Georgia because they went to Florida when Georgia kicked them out. And now they're coming back to Georgia. It is truly, as Ron DeSantis says, the most ambitious, quote, anti-illegal immigration laws in the United States, close quote. Yeah. And what that means is people that are undocumented are going to leave your state. And because they're going to leave your state, you're not going to have workers. They're not going to go to the hospital because hospitals are supposed to ask patients for status, even though they don't have to answer the question. There's, of course, no crackdown because they don't have any money. They don't have any money for a crackdown in Florida. We're going to get money to do this. With all the work being done, this one dude, this one Juan Baregas says, just framing for a large developer, lost half of his crew of 40 people in the last few weeks. You know? But so he said, maybe the law won't even be enforced, but they feel persecuted. They just want to live in peace. Tim Conlon, the president of the roofing company, said a subcontractor recently turned down a project after his workers refused to travel to Florida, preferring to stay in Georgia and the Carolinas. They've had to increase their rates for jobs. Thus, it becomes more expensive in Florida to get work done. This is truly nut. Well, Ronnie Fine, a Republican state representative, no business should be dependent on illegal immigration. No, I agree. No, they shouldn't. But the reality is they are. And you don't have a solution. Your solution is just to punish people. And, you know, this is it's entirely predictable. Ron DeSantis is never going to be president of the United States. The dude's a moron. He's not qualified to be president. He has no vision. He is an uninspiring blob of human flesh. He'll never be president of the United States. So that's my take on Ron DeSantis's Florida mess that he got himself into. Let's take the last thing I want to do, and this is actually something that I've been interested in for a long time. You may remember that President Trump proposed a merit-based system where you had accumulated points in order to it's called the RAISE Act. You had to get a number of points to qualify for an employment-based green card. It also depended on your spouse. If your spouse had lower points, your spouse could bring you down. So let's say I'm looking at, if I'm 51 older, I get 0 points. So the younger you are, the more points you get. This is the Trump system. If you have a high school degree, you get 1 point. If you have a STEM professional doctorate, you get 13 points. If you speak English fluently, you get 12 points. If you don't speak it at all, you get 0 points. If you're a Nobel laureate, you get 25 points. Or an individual Olympic medal or first place in a competition, you get 15 points. So they had all these point systems to do this. And when I took this test, I figured, well, I could, even though I get no points for my age, my other accomplishments would allow me to get enough points to immigrate to the country with my wife. This, of course, never passed. It never became law. It never became law because it's stupid. Point systems are dumb because you end up immigrating people who have they're fluent in English, have a PhD in something, and they get here and they can't get a job. Canada did this for years and ended up having taxi cab drivers with PhDs. It's not an effective way to run the system. The system really needs to be, what we have is not necessarily a bad system. It just has stopping points, choke points that force it to not be effective. For example, why is there a cap on employment-based immigration? If an employer has to either show that, you know, if you have your extraordinary ability, why is there a cap on extraordinary ability? Why? We should be emptying China and Russia out of all their best scientists. Just empty them out of their best scientists. Why do we have a cap? That's just stupid. Why aren't we bringing the best people to America? Why are we limiting by country? You know, if there's 10,000 Chinese dudes with PhDs in nuclear engineering, wouldn't you want all of them? Of course you would, but you're only going to get like 500 of them. Or if you've got the best programmers in the world in India, or the best hotel managers, why are you limiting them? There shouldn't be a limit. You know, if there's no limit at all in any category, then there shouldn't be country limits. It's the forcing of country limits when you have overall limits. Get rid of the overall limits. You no longer need country limits. I mean, that's just the way it needs to be. But our friends at Cato, David Beard really, he's no longer a rising star in the immigration field. Remember, we had Alex Narashta on our show, our old show. And I think I had David on that show probably 5 or 6 years ago. I need to invite them back here to join me. And maybe next week, see if they can do the new online game. So the new online game is called the Green Card Game. The Green Card Game. So if you played the Green Card Game, so first starts out is begin the game. Can you immigrate legally? Let's see. Let's see if we can start. First, you got to select an avatar. I'm a little disturbed. There's no older white guys in the avatar. So I'm going to go. I mean, I guess I'm going to go with the younger white guy. We're going to go with Chuck here. What's your name? So Chuck will be in there. Get your name in this. You submit this. You're playing, try to immigrate. Your goal is a green card. So I'm going to continue the game. Provide my background. What's my background? So they have some pre-done backgrounds. They're a Bolivian indigenous house cleaner, a Nigerian Christian farm worker, a Cuban anti-communist graduate student, an Indian Muslim software developer, a Venezuelan dissident facility manager, or a Chinese Christian occupational therapist. Let's provide our own background here. So we're going to go our country of birth. I'm going to pick Peru because I'm Peruvian. Lived there long enough to acclimate to the country. So we're going to put Peru, and my main occupation. I'm going to put a lawyer down. I'm going to see if I can. You know, let's see if they have a lawyer. I don't know if they have a lawyer. Live a lawyer. I'll be a lawyer here. My education, of course, I've got a post-professional degree. They asked for savings. We'll just leave there. They have one that's preset at $11,879. My destination, let's just pick Georgia. Let's see how this whole program works. My age is that they're not going to like my age. You know, I'm 60. Marital status, I am married. I have no minor children. And we'll go with the religion is Latter-day Saints, although they spelled it wrong, but that's okay. Do you meet the green? There are minimum standards. Do you meet the green card standards? Have you been vaccinated? Yes, I've been vaccinated for all these things. I have no communicable disease. I'm not a drug user of any kind. I don't have a disorder of alcohol-related stuff that pose a threat. Not going to practice polygamy. Not going to be a sex worker. That's good. Never been convicted of a crime. I'm not going to engage in unlawful activity. I'm not a communist, not a terrorist. I was not a Nazi. And you must now qualify. So I begin. You have no family. Are you a refugee? No, I'm not a refugee. So I'm going to skip that. Do you qualify for the lottery application? So I click the lottery. You must pay for transport. Yes, I can pay. Nearly 70 countries are open. It's an open consulate, so I can apply. Can you afford it? Yes, it's $550, $300 medical exam. Afford the passport? I can afford that. Not English? Can you afford a translator? Yes, I can afford that. Do I need cash receipt? No cash receipt. Government will decide. Okay, I can provide evidence of support. Do I have a professional degree? Yes, I do. How many months of experience? I have like 500 months of experience. Probably good there. I have a full-time job offer. Wage is going to be more than enough to pay for this. All right, so I can do that. So it's more than 15,000. I have the special skills. How many hours a week is your job offer? So these are all just for the diversity lottery. Do you have a job offer defined? You're both not, okay, can't use it as evidence. I don't have a qualifying job offer. So I got a final denial notice for that. How about the employer sponsored? So I have to restart the game. This is actually really interesting to go through this process. And I would encourage you to take advantage of Cato's game. Understand how hard the immigration process is, or, you know, a lot of people listen to this are actually immigration lawyers. Share it on your website, share it in your newsletter, share it in your office, talk about it in your podcast or in your Facebook lives. So these are things I think really point out how broken our system is. It's completely, utterly bananas. That's what it is. Is bananas a word? I think it is. I think bananas is a word. So this is good for this week. We'll wrap up here. We got our 20 minutes in. I don't want to do much more than that. My attention span as much is as limited as yours is. We'll be back next week. Same time, same bat channel. If you have any questions, comments, concerns, issues, you can always reach me at immigration.net. Again, Chuck Cook here on the Immigration Podcast. We'll see you next week. Bye-bye.